Welcome to another edition of the TDN Writers Room, a Kentucky Derby edition. We've come in through all the preps, got the draw, the race is Saturday, and our team is raring to go. Hopefully, we'll give you some insights that will help you cash in some tickets and better enjoy the race. My name is Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News and also co-host the Down the Stretch radio show on Saturdays on Sirius XM Radio with Dave Johnson.
I am Randy Moss with NBC Sports. I hope I'm raring to go. I am here at Churchill Downs. We're taping this now on Monday morning, and we probably need to get that out there when we talk about the Derby horses, because with all the dropouts we've seen in past years, who knows what's going to happen between now and Saturday. But I'm in a production trailer just outside of Churchill Downs, and just got here and ready to roll.
And for those just listening to this, that wasn't the sound of Randy trying to actually escape from a box, because that's exactly what it sounded like. He is at Churchill Downs. I'm Zoe Cabman. I'm home. And I work for Santa Anita and XBTV, and I'm delighted to be here. It is Monday morning and pretty early.
Well, it's not too early, Zoe, to try to figure out this puzzle that is the 150th Kentucky Derby. So, folks, here's what I thought we would do. We're literally going to go over every single horse in the race. We'll give the 50-to-1 shots 10, 15 seconds, and do more with the main contenders. So let's just get this started through post position order. And in this first segment, we'll do the first 10. And it's all you have there.
We're kicking off the post position draw, right?
That's okay. Does he have a name?
No. Would you like to name him?
Doodle.
No.
Oh, wait, That's taken.
Holy Bull. Because he's white. Okay.
All right, Holy Bull. All right. At least there's something godly in my house. All right.
All right. So let's get right to it. The number one post position at 20-to-1 is Door Knock. I thought he was a big disappointment in the Bluegrass when he really didn't run up to expectations. And I also think the post position draw for him is one of the most significant post draws in the entire race, because I don't think they have any choice but to go for the lead from the one post. They got to get him out there. And if he takes him back and settles in behind a bunch of horses from the one post, he could have a terrible trip. My prediction is that he will go for the lead, but I don't think he's going to be there at the end, Randy.
Well, Danny Gargan had already said after they eased him back off the pace and he got an inside trip in the Bluegrass and he did not react well, that they were going to employ a different strategy for the Kentucky Derby. This was even before the draw. He said, we need to keep his face clean. And now that he drew post number one, Gargan says, now he's going to have his face really clean. So I agree with you that it's the most impactful part of the draw. He'll probably go to the lead from the rail. Track Phantom will probably be out there with him and just outside of him. It probably guarantees, at the minimum, a fairly lively pace. And one thing we don't know, there's a lot of things we don't know about these horses because they're so lightly raced. One thing we don't know necessarily, conclusively, what if Dornock is the type of horse that improves substantially with the early lead? We've seen him run some hellacious races, a couple, when he was on the early lead. So that's the one caveat. You look at Dornock's form and you're like, okay, he hasn't really lived up to expectations. But if he can somehow control the pace in the Kentucky Derby, even in fast fractions, might he be the kind of horse that takes a big jump for? We don't know.
Control the pace with Fierceness in there and several others. I don't think so. We got 20 horses to get through. I'll make this quick. I would not have liked to have interviewed Danny Gargan after the post position draw. 1 and 20. That's about as bad luck as you can get. So yeah, Dornock is in very, very deep water. I hope he can swim.
The second choice in the wagering is Sierra Leone at 3-to-1, who drew the two post. Now, as somebody who plans to bet on this horse, I would have preferred he drew 8, 9, 10, something like that. But unlike Dornock, he's not a horse that's going to go for the lead. He's got a very smart jockey in him and Tyler Gaffleone. He may run into some trouble somewhere, but I'm putting my faith in Tyler to ride a good race. And, you know, if things really break his way, you know he's going to save ground on the first turn, which will help. Maybe if they could get an inside trip, a couple holes open up for him, he could get an extremely good trip. He could also get a lousy trip because of the two post. But I have faith in the connections, and I think Chad Brown's going to get his first Kentucky Derby win, Zoe.
I like him too. I've loved him since he was a yearling. Boy, oh boy, has he grown. He's got this just giant, I'm going to call it like it is. It looks like a lumbering stride, but he just keeps going and he can go at a quick rhythm. The only problem he may have is that I do not see him threading the needle. He can save ground on the first turn, but the second turn he's going to have to swing out. I have no question he can get the mile and a quarter, but there, if he gets stopped as big as he is, he will never get going again. He is going to need a clean trip. But yeah, he's a pick for me, and the mile and a quarter is going to hit him right between the eyeballs.
I totally
and the last horse to win from post position number two was Affirmed. Is he Affirmed? I don't know.
Look, I totally agree that the mile and a quarter will be perfect for him. We talked about Dornick in post one, assuring a lively pace. That will help him. Typically, I don't care about the 20-horse field and a comfort behind her. History has proven that if a horse is a Kentucky Derby-worthy horse, in the big majority of circumstances, they can make their own luck. The field gets spread out enough with a quick pace. They can find enough room to launch their bid, and if they're good enough, they win, usually. And post position number two doesn't bother me in the least.
Nope.
But look, with his running style, he's going to be going back, not forward, in the run to the first turn. So the traffic's not going to be an issue for him. Post position anyways, the draw is the most overrated part of the week. When we used to do a one-hour post position draw on TV, it was the worst TV in the history of sports broadcasting. And in this case, you know, really the only drama in the post position draw was fierceness, and we'll get to that in a minute. So I think he is a strong, strong, strong contender.
All right. Number three is Mystic Dan at 20-1 in the morning line. My take on him, he ran a 101 buyer when he won the Southwest Stakes. If he can run that again, he's a contender. But then he came back and ran poorly in his next start. Did he bounce, or was the 101 in the Southwest a fluke? I have tremendous success, tremendous confidence in trainer Kenny McPeak. He's one of those long shots that I think, you know, might make his name, you might hear his name coming down the stretch. Randy.
Look, the Southwest Stakes, he was aided by a tremendous rail bias that day on a muddy track at Oakland. Almost all the horses that won that day were right on top of the rail. He sat on the rail every step of the way. He finished like a wild horse, the most visually impressive prep win other than fierceness in the Florida Derby. But look, he was aided by a bias and maybe even the muddy track. He had a bit of an excuse in the Arkansas Derby. To me, the real Mystic Dan is somewhere in between what you saw in the Southwest and what you saw in the Arkansas Derby, which to me is not good enough.
I'm in agreement with Randy there. I mean, a good thing in his favor is that he broke his maiden by 7.5 at Churchill Downs. So he's going to handle the trip. Is he good enough? I don't think so.
Well, we shall find out. Okay. The 4-horse at 8-1 is Catching Freedom, one of the Brad Cox entries into this race. He's also pace dependent, that's for sure. And also a question, is he good enough? I mean, he runs well, but he was 3rd in the Risen Star behind Sierra Leone and Track Phantom, 2 horses he's got to deal with again in the Kentucky Derby. He'd have to improve quite a bit to vault over those 2 horses. I would never disrespect or overlook a horse trained by Brad Cox, but I think, you know, this is a perfect horse that's going to clunk up a little bit and close her 5th or 6th or something like that, Zoe.
He could get a little piece of it, especially they're calling for a little bit of rain Friday, Saturday. The last time I looked, it was 35-40% on Saturday. He'll handle an off track, no problem. He's going to get a good trip under Flavien Prat, who has won the Derby by TQ, but nonetheless, he's got plenty of experience there. So he'll get a little piece of it.
He was a little bit slow coming around mentally for the Brad Cox stable. He still, when you see like his pre-Derby workout, he never has been a horse that really touts himself in the morning, so I wouldn't pay too much attention to that. I do think he needs to improve a little bit off his Louisiana Derby win. He'll get the pace. But one thing that I really liked about his Louisiana Derby win is that he came from last place to win, and the pace wasn't particularly fast. And he was able to overcome that and win anyway. So I think he slots right in behind the top three or four. He's in there with a chance to win, and certainly a horse that could be part of the exotics.
Number five is Catalytic. He is 30-1 in the morning line, trained by Safi Joseph. Jose Ortiz will ride. He's one of those we're just happy to be here horses. I can't see him being even competitive.
Hey, I love the Fierceness Catalytic Exacta in the Florida Derby, just because if you look at Catalytic's earlier races, visually, he was very, very impressive. Okay. Now, you know, does getting beaten by almost 14 lengths in the Florida Derby by Fierceness make him a Kentucky Derby contender, even though he finished second in the Florida Derby? Probably, on paper, no.
He's got over the track pretty nicely there at Churchill Downs. He's going to be part of the pace. He's going to be close. It's going to be his best shot to get a piece of it. And his owner, Tammy Bobo, is going to be the best dressed person there. That I can guarantee. If you see someone walking over in heels, it'll be Tammy. So watch out.
All right. One of the best stories in the race is, of course, Wayne Lucas, not only having a horse in the Kentucky Derby at age 88, but riding Keith Asmussen, the son of Steve Asmussen, the Hall of Fame trainer, who was just a wonderful guest on our podcast last week. If you're a little bit behind, please go back and watch that. You'll be blown away by how articulate this young man was. And he's off to a great start in his career. I'm not going to pick this horse, but I wouldn't be shocked if he ran a pretty good race. And the reason why, there is a pattern with Lucas horses being erratic. They run one good race, then one bad race, one good race, one bad race. So he's coming off the bad race. Well, actually, no, he's not. He's coming off the Arkansas Derby where he was second. But you can see in his past performances, he didn't run well in the Rebel. He's had several other races, the Breeders' Futurity, he didn't run well. On his very best day, I think he could finish in the money. And who knows with Wayne Lucas, maybe the gods of up there are rooting for Wayne Lucas, just like so many fans will be.
Well, he ran a new top last time on the 30th of March, running second behind Muth. I don't know. I mean, if you watch the works, like I've been watching them, D. Wayne Lucas was, you know, he was like, I wish he'd gone faster. He wanted 50, he got 50-1. And that wasn't a 50-1 the right way with the rider tugging at the reins. That horse looked like he wanted no part of anything to do with going a half mile over the strip on Churchill Downs. So whether he can rebound, maybe he's just a little flat right now. I have got no idea. Am I rooting for Wayne? Absolutely. Keith Asmussen? Absolutely. But, you know, maybe we can just like lock him up in the stall for the next few days and freshen him up a little bit. But he did not look great getting over the Churchill Downs strip.
NBC Sports, two big features for the Kentucky Derby telecast will be Larry Demarant and Wes Saratoga and the owner, Barry Verucci, which is going to be a fabulous feature. And also the Wayne Lucas Asmussen angle, because not just, I mean, one of the key angles there, and Keith might have talked about this last week, I don't know. When Wayne was a young quarter horse trainer, he rode Keith Asmussen, the grandfather, and now he's riding Keith, the grandson. I mean, how many trainers you see that have ridden grandfather and grandson? I guess when you're 88 years old, you can get to that point. But look, Just Steele ran the race of his life in the Arkansas Derby. He was four wide on both turns and still, ran a very good second behind Muth. If he repeats that race, I think he'll be part of the superfecta. But as Zoe pointed out, you know, there are some reasons to think that maybe he won't be quite as sharp. We have to try to, you know, turn over every rock we can find to look for any clues we possibly can.
All right. The seven horses, Honor Marie, trained by Whit Beckman, ridden by Ben Curtis. That's a good story there. Ben Curtis just came over from England and is having a great initial run in the United States. Second in the Louisiana Derby behind Catching Freedom. Not particularly fast. His was unable to win either the Risen Star or the Louisiana Derby. It's just on paper, you can tell that he's just not as good as the top five or six horses in this race. I'm not expecting much from him.
I think he's got a big shot to land in the superfecta. I really do. I mean, when I talked about Catching Freedom being last early behind a modest pace in the Louisiana Derby, Honor Marie was right back there with him next to last. And Catching Freedom went by Honor Marie, but Honor Marie followed him at that point, and they pretty much kept up with him all through the final 3/8 of a mile or so. Catching Freedom beat Anna Marie by a length. Anna Marie has trained very well at Churchill Downs. He loves the Churchill Downs strip. He showed that as a two-year-old when he won the Kentucky Jockey Club in very eye-catching fashion, if you go back and watch that video. So, yeah, I think from off the pace, I think Anna Marie has a really good chance to, with a pretty lively pace in front of him, to finish third or fourth.
Huge shot. I mean, his work over the Churchill Downs strip was good. You want to look at a good work, 59-1, fastest of 111 that day for Whit Beckman, who worked for many, many years for not only Chad Brown, but also Todd Pletcher. Ben Curtis knows his way around a racetrack, fourth leading rider at Fairgrounds. He won over 1,000 races in England. Good man on a horse, can ride a very, very smart race. This is a must-use.
Wow, a lot of love for Anna Marie there. I'll have to give a second look at him and see if I can come around and believe in him like my two colleagues do. All right, the 8 horse is Just a Touch. He was 10-1 on the morning line. We talked about him a little bit last week, where both Randy and I thought that he was one of the live, more live long shots. 10-1 is not necessarily the rich strike category or mind that bird, but he'll be 10-1, 8-1, something like that. And Randy, you've talked a lot about this, is that with these horses having so few starts coming in to the Kentucky Derby, you more have to project what they're going to do going forward than look at what they've already done. And this is a perfect example of this. He's only run 3 times. He's only won once, but he seems to be on the improve each time. He gave Sierra Leone a little bit of a fight in the Bluegrass last time out, got a decent figure, 96 buyer. He's got to run better. But this is a horse that I could definitely see being the one that jumps up by the 5 lengths that you need to do to be in the win the Kentucky Derby. So he will be on my exacta and trifecta tickets, no doubt about it. I'm expecting a big race from him.
Yeah, it's not just the horse players that are still learning about horses like Just a Touch and still trying to figure out where the upper part of their talents are, right? How much they can improve, whether they can handle being put in certain positions during a race that they've never been in before. It's not just us. Trainers don't know it. Jockeys don't know it. No one knows it, right? It's all subjective. And Just a Touch is a perfect example of this. I think they thought in the Bluegrass Stakes he had a chance to control the early pace. They wanted to send him to the lead. They didn't expect Top Connor to blast off like he did from the Chad Brown barn. And they wound up being engaged in a much faster pace than they had hoped. And Just a Touch weakened in the last part of the Bluegrass Stakes. I think he'll be ridden differently in the Kentucky Derby, especially now that you look at the race on paper and you see Dornock from post one and, you know, Track Phantom's in there. I don't think they feel like Just a Touch can do his best running being right up there in the mix on what's going to be a lively pace. I think they're going to try to ease him back, maybe fourth, fifth, get into rate, right? Trust that Justify blood going 1.25 miles and see if he can win from that position. Can he? We haven't seen him in that position. We don't know if he'll be able to handle it or not. But he definitely ran an excellent race in the Bluegrass Stakes, and I think he's one of the top 4 contenders at the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, that he did. He's on a lot of people's minds, Just a Touch. But I'm not sure we've ever seen a Derby in which trying to teach a horse how to rate has actually worked in the Kentucky Derby. We know one thing about Flo is that he will lean forward on a horse. And that's one of his biggest attributes, is that Flo goes forward. So he's going to be part of a big mix on a big day with a big crowd. I just don't know. The jury is out for me.
Number 9 is Encino, 20-1, another Brad Cox trainee, ridden by Axel Concepcion. And this is a horse who, after running 3 straight races on the synthetic surface, looked better on the main track, winning the Lexington, got a nice 94 buyer, a 2 on the thoroughgraph sheets. But obviously he's going to have to improve off that. That was not a real salty race by any stretch of the imagination. Could go to the lead. He went to the lead in the Lexington. He went to the lead in his maiden win. But in the Battaglia, he rated. It was 5th, 6th, 4th, 2nd, and then got the win. So I'm not really sure what his running style is. I would think that Brad Cox can look at the race and decide that there's enough speed in here that we better not get caught up in the early lead. So, a horse, if he hits the board, I'm not surprised, just because that's how much confidence I have in Brad Cox. But we shall see. It won't be my main pick, obviously.
Yeah, if you were to pick like maybe the top three or four horses in the Kentucky Derby based on how they've been training only, if you knew nothing about them on paper, Encino would be one of those horses at the very top of the list. Training exceptionally well. Big, huge, beautiful horse. The kind of horse that, you know, you would look at and think, wow, this is a Derby horse. Whether he's – is he good enough on paper? No. Do we know – you know, how much he might improve, what the, you know, what the upper limit is? No. So he's one of those horses you'd have to have faith in Brad Cox and have faith that the horse is going to take a big step forward based on the way he's been training.
And you went gate to wire in his last race, his first start on dirt. He purely just raced on synthetic. So if he's not on the lead, has he been schooled behind 5-10 other horses? How's he going to handle that? I mean, that is my biggest worry about him. Is that he's never had that kind of kickback in his face.
And the Lexington was not the place to try to teach him because he was the only real speed in the race. They thought they could control the pace. They needed the points to make sure that they could get into the Kentucky Derby, and that wasn't the time to be experimenting with taking him back off the lead. So we don't know.
Do you teach him now? Do you teach him in the biggest race of his life?
I'm not sure he's fast enough to make the early lead anyway, so I think they're going to be forced to try to get him back off the pace a little bit.
All right. Well, we always want to see what Randy Moss thinks of the Japanese horses because he was the president of the Dermasotagaki fan club, the Minnesota chapter last year, and didn't run so well in the Derby. We ran great in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So he was not a bust by no means. But the first of the two Japanese horses is number 10, T.O. Password. This is the mystery horse in the race. We know absolutely nothing about him, but he's only run twice in his life. And he won last time out by a head at 13-1 in a stake at a racetrack in Japan. I'm not going to be someone to throw out all the Japanese horses all the time, even though they've stunk in the Derby. But this horse is a complete throwout.
Oh, he's got a winning half brother, several winning half brothers. In fact, just yesterday, his half brother won a grade one over there in Japan, a group one. T.O. Royal is his name. So it's come from a winning family. He'll obviously be fit enough, as they all are, but the jury is out. I commend them for coming over.
He is the pace X factor in here, guys, because both of his races in Japan were won in wire-to-wire fashion. They believe that's how he runs his best races. There's no doubt in my mind that he's going to be sent aggressively from the starting gate to try to get the early lead. The only question is he fast enough? Is he fast enough to be part of a lively pace? Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right, so those are half the field. We went through Derby horses 1 through 10. After these messages, we'll be back and we'll round out the rest of the Derby field, which, of course, includes the favorite, Fierceness.
The TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Keeneland's 2024 spring meet concluded Friday with an all-sources wagering exceeding $218 million, the third highest handle in track history. Average daily purse money of $1.16 million attracted Thoroughbred Racing's top stables and jockeys, delivering 16 days of quality racing, complemented by community and special events that offered family fun with a philanthropic mission. I've been to Keeneland. I know exactly what they're talking about. Congratulations to Wesley Ward for winning the trainer's title. All right, the Keeneland April Selected Horses of Racing Age Sale took off, and John Stewart, no surprise here, his Resolute Racing was the stable's leading buyer, spending $1.172 million for four horses. We do want to remind you, John Stewart, that entries for the September yearling sale are now open. The sale will start Monday, September the 9th, and the entry deadline is May the 1st. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
When the spring meet ends, summer success begins. Buy, sell, fresh winners, hot prospects. One night, one chance. Finish strong. Don't miss out. The Keeneland April Selected Horses of Racing Age Sale, Friday, April 26th.
TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Pleasant Acres Stallions in Ocala, Florida. New to Pleasant Acres this year is the first year stallion verifying. Not only is verifying by the Triple Crown winner Justify the most exciting young sire in the world, we'll hear from Emma Berry a little bit later on, but he's also the half-brother to the Eclipse Award-winning champion Midnight Bisou. All sound familiar? Well, it should. Verify is the only son of Justify standing in Florida. He was a $775,000 Keeneland September yearling. He broke his maiden at first asking in his first start for trainer Brad Cox at Saratoga. He was third in the Grade 1 Champaign in just his second start. The winner of the Indiana Derby, he was second in the Grade 1 Bluegrass and the Grade 1 Alan Jerkins Memorial Stakes. Verifying stands his first season at Pleasant Acres in Florida for a mere $10,000.
And this week's Fastest Horse of the Week is brought to you by Nashville, one of those fast sires at Windstar Farm. Will Nashville pass along that blazing speed to his offspring? Well, the earliest results are encouraging. This is a 46-day-old filly out of Della Frost, foaled in January, a 21-day-old Candy Apple Red colt, and a filly out of the Mare Kensho. This is taken when the filly was just 24 days old. Reminder, Nashville was a track record holder, or is a track record holder, at Keeneland, 6 furlongs and 107.89. Earlier on that Breeders' Cup card, faster than the Breeders' Cup Sprint, he was also a TDN Rising Star in his debut. Covered a full book of mares in his second year at stud, 2024, and stands at one star for $15,000. Fastest Horse of the Week, a name we're all very familiar with. From Saturday at Santa Anita, from the Kona Gold Stakes, a sprint stakes for open company. That would be the Chosen Vron getting his 16th career stakes win. Buyer speed figure 102. The Chosen Vron just keeps on keeping on. The Fastest Horse of the Week again.
Well, now let's go look through the second half of the field, starting with number 11, Forever Young, at 10-1. He is the better, quote unquote, of the two Japanese horses. Obviously, he's got a lot of talent. He's 5-for-5. He won the Saudi Derby and won the UAE Derby before coming over here. Randy, I'll start with you on this one because, you know, we kid you about Dermasotagaki, but you had a lot of reasons for picking him. How do you compare this horse to Dermasotagaki, and do you like him a little bit?
Yeah, I think they're comparable. We could talk for 30 minutes about Forever Young. I'll be very quick, fast-paced, concise, right? Forever Young's 5-for-5. He's won at 5 different racetracks. He went wide on both turns to win the UAE Derby. You can think of buyer speed figures roughly. You can think of both of those races, Saudi Derby, UAE Derby, as about a 101, especially if you consider ground loss and things like that. So he fits with the Kentucky Derby horses on what we've seen on paper. He can be close to the lead. He can be from off the pace. Here's what I'm concerned about. After he won the UAE Derby, the trainer publicly said that in his trip from Japan to Saudi Arabia, he did not handle the travel well. That was 5,000 plus miles. This was 7,000 miles from Dubai to Europe. Layover, short layover, Europe to Chicago, 42-day quarantine on a van, Chicago, 5.5-6 hours to Louisville. If he didn't handle the travel well from Japan to Saudi Arabia, and he didn't really come with that until after Dubai, so you didn't know that. How did he handle the travel to Churchill Downs? Secondly, the trainer seems to be obsessed with kickback. And I've gone back and looked at every one of these horses' races, and he took a significant amount of kickback in a couple of those. One of them he didn't break, and he was back in the back on the inside and took a shower of kickback. Now, was the kickback in Japan the same as the kickback in the United States? I don't know, but they seem obsessed with keeping him out of kickback. If they try to do that in the Kentucky Derby, he's screwed because he'll be too wide. He's going to get kickback probably. How's he going to handle it? The trainer's not a dummy. I mean, he's the same trainer that won with Love's Only You and March Lorraine in the Breeders' Cup a few years ago that everybody was hailing as a genius. If he thinks the horse doesn't handle kickback well, there's got to be a reason why he feels that way. So those are the big concerns that I have about Forever Young. Talent-wise, I think he fits right with all the ones except fierceness if he runs his forward ability.
He's a progressive kind of horse. I'll say that each of his every starts, he's got better. He switched leads on cue last time. He took a little bit of kickback. It seems like he's going the right way. He already practiced all his traveling, so maybe this time it'll be a little bit better. He'll be a bit more used to it. He had all those days in Chicago with the quarantine to get over if he'd had any problem with the travel from Japan over to Chicago. He's arrived at Churchill Downs. I think he's looked really, really good on the track. If you follow the rag numbers, his numbers are right there. Sierra Leone, Forever Young, and Fierceness are the top three on rag numbers. So if you're going by that and the fact he's a progressive kind of horse, you have to use him. You have to use him. And one thing's for sure, distance is not going to be a problem for him. Fitness is not going to be a problem for him.
I have a question. So you've seen the rag numbers. I haven't. Were those, you mentioned Sierra Leone, Forever Young, Fierceness. What
yeah,
did they
I don't
us?
Have them is, all is in the front top, of them.
What was the top rag number?
Fierceness.
Okay. Fierceness. I was going to throw a big flag on Ragazin if they didn't have Fierceness.
Fierceness, yeah. Sierra Leone and him. Those are like the standouts.
Okay.
Well, I'm not as enthusiastic because of the overall very poor record of Japanese horses in the Kentucky Derby. It's going to, they'll win it someday, but that you can have this horse. I can't get excited about any horse coming out of Japan until they prove they can overcome some of the obstacles that you guys brought up. Okay. Number 12 is Track Phantom, 20-1 on the morning line. Steve Asmussen looking for his first ever Kentucky Derby win. I don't like this horse. I don't think he can go a mile and a quarter. He's struggled in all his races beyond a mile and a 16th. Having said that, he's going to play a huge factor in this race because he is definitely going to go for the lead. I mean, this is a horse with only one way of going. He goes out front. He draws inside of Fierceness. We'll get back to that when we talk about Fierceness. I still think that Fierceness camp is also going to have to go for the lead and try to duplicate the effort he had in the Florida Derby, where I think the strategy was this horse doesn't like to get in trouble. So the best way to keep him out of trouble is just to go right to the lead. Track Phantom is going to set the pace. And if Doorknock goes after him, if Fierceness goes after him, and maybe a few others, that's going to have a big impact on the race. And I just thought this is a good horse. I mean, he could be a Haskell winner, for instance, you know, at a more speed conducive racetrack at a mile and eighth. I don't think he's a good fit for this Derby, though.
46-4 over under opening half mile.
I'd say under.
I think it's pretty accurate. 46-3, 46-4. I think that's pretty.
Yeah, just
pretty
under.
Solid. Just under. Okay, I'm going to say 46-4. Hey, he's got the blinkers on. Has that ever worked in the Kentucky Derby? Blinkers on in a race with 20 horses and 150,000 lubricated screaming fans. I'm not going to argue with trainer Steve Asmussen because maybe it'll help. Some horses just need focus so they don't see the guy throwing a beer can at him. So maybe the blinkers are going to help this horse focus in that way and not so much for speed. I'm not arguing with Steve Asmussen. No way. If he thinks that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know if Bombay Duck had blinkers on or not when he got hit with the beer can in 1975. He sure felt it, though. I know that. So, look, I mean, to me, the post position draw indirectly impacted Track Phantom as much as any other horse. McDornick drew post position number one, and now Danny Garvin's absolutely committed to going for the lead. Steve Asmussen swears that the only reason Track Phantom has been on the lead is just because he's been a faster horse than the others, that he doesn't have to be on the lead, that he can sit off the pace nicely, and that the plan is not to go to the lead, despite the fact that he's got blinkers on. We don't know if Track Phantom can run as well, sitting second length, you know, just off the outside hip of Doorknock. He has run head-to-head before and went on to win in some of his earlier races. But I also, Bill, I share your concern about the mile and a quarter. I share the concern that in this particular situation, the pace might be a little too quick for him. He's never shown that he can beat horses like this, sitting a little bit off the pace, and I'm not sure he's fast enough anyway. So I'm not going to put him in any of my waitresses.
All right, we move on now to West Saratoga, the 13 horse at 50-1. Beautiful, nice story. A very nice man, Larry Demmer, came out of the Bahamas, become a trainer here in America. Real small-time stable. They bought this horse for $11,000. And, oh, yeah, the poor trainer is fighting a brilliant battle and a valiant battle against cancer. I mean, if this horse wins Saturday, it won't be a dry eye in the place. But he's 50-1. He's not good enough. I'd love to see the story happen, but it's not going to happen Saturday.
No, you can't blame them for running. He's got the points to get in. It's a once-in-a-lifetime, literally, opportunity for these guys. Hope he runs well. I would love to see him get a check, you know, run fifth or something like that, and, you know, prove to them that he was worthy and that he belongs, and they can walk out with their head held high. That's what I'm hoping for. On paper, he's really up against it.
Horse racing's all about stories, right? We tried to get Larry Demerit on last week. He was having his chemo, so unfortunately we did not get him on. But Larry's a dear friend of mine. They say he's 70-something. He won't reveal his age. I've known Larry as long as I've been in the States. He might be a little older. He's got the most infectious smile. He is one of the best guys, best stories in horse racing. If you ever see him without a smile, it's absolutely impossible. He is just a true old school horseman. Now that horse will work and he'll work fast. He's a tough, good looking horse who's gets Rafael Bejarano aboard him, and I'm wishing him all the best. Is he good enough on paper? Probably not, but this is a story you're going to want to follow. When you hear Larry laugh, Randy, I don't know if you've done the feature with Larry already, but he has one of the most infectious laughs that you'll ever hear in your lifetime. So I am rooting for my good friend, Larry Demerit. And hey, if Eric Reed can do it, Larry Demerit can do it. We were all stabled where is now heralded ground at Keeneland. Back in the day, those bottom barns down below the training track, no one wanted to stay down there. It was all the gyps that were down there. They shoved everyone down there, and Godolphin and the Todd Pletchers wanted to be up top. We were all down in the bottom. I was working for Chris Beckett. Eric Reed was on one side, and Larry Demerit had five or six down at the end of our shed row. And we were all in the same shed row. It would be just a monumental story, and the training center at Keeneland would go absolutely nuts. It's a brilliant
story. You'll see and hear that infectious laugh on NBC on Saturday.
I look forward to watching that. Yeah, what a neat guy and what a neat story that would be. 14 is endlessly at 30-1 in the morning line. And there is this huge question on him. He's never run on dirt. And originally, after he won the JR Stakes, trainer Michael McCarthy was saying he was not going to run in the Kentucky Derby. He wanted to run in one of the big grass races on the Derby undercard, which where he would have been a bigger fit. But the trainers, the Ammerman family, it looks like they overruled him and said that he was going to the Derby. Again, just like Zoe said with West Saratoga, you can't blame them. You know, things happen. It's their one chance in the world to win the Kentucky Derby. If Rich Strike can do it, if Mind That Bird can do it, that means, you know, other horses that are long shots can pull this off. But my problem with him is not necessarily the dirt. My problem is he's not fast enough. And he's been taking a monumental jump up in class from the JR Stakes and the El Camino Real Derby. And, would be a neat story, but I don't see it at all.
Yeah, I mean, the Ammermans, the owners, John Ammerman, his wife, Jerry, have been in the business for roughly 30 years. They've had a lot of really top-class horses, including Oscar Performance, the sire of this horse. They've never been in the Kentucky Derby. And so this might be, you know, they're getting up there. Who knows? This might be their only chance to run in the Derby. So you can see why, you know, they might have sort of overruled Michael McCarthy to give this horse a chance. The horse has not trained brilliantly on dirt. Does that mean that he will run a lackluster race on dirt? Probably. He's got a grass pedigree top and bottom. But we don't know that, right? Maybe he's just the horse, the type of horse that just doesn't put out much in the mornings and saves his best races for the afternoon. Maybe that's why in the morning, when they've trained him on dirt his entire career, he just hasn't shown that much. Is that enough to pin your hat on to bet on him? Probably not. But he was an eye-catching winner of the Jeff Ruby. He was very visually impressive winning that race.
He really was. And West Saratoga was right behind him. So we're talking about two long shots running here, and I can't blame the Ammermans. They've put a lot of money in. It's been a long time breeding operation. It's a homebred for them. Oscar Performance, his runners are running lights out, but they're doing it on the grass. So why not give it a shot? You're getting Umby Rispoli. He was very happy with the work. He flew and worked him. Towards the end of the work, perhaps when he was coming off the bridle, you could see that little bit of turfy action. But hey, if there's any racetrack in North America that's quite turf friendly to turf runners, it's actually Churchill Downs. When you consider some of the winners of the Kentucky Derby, I'm thinking mainly Animal Kingdom, Big Brown, that have that big action. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility. Am I going to gamble on him? No, but I can't blame them for trying.
No, you certainly can't. All right, let's get to number 15, domestic product. You have that magical combination of Chad Brown and Irad Ortiz. And I've heard some whispers. Some people are talking this horse up a little bit. It's Zoe's turn, but I'm going to go to Randy first on this one. Because, Randy, this is the slowest horse in the race, is he not? Pretty much? I mean,
we don't really know how good he is because he comes out of a couple of really slow-paced races that impacted the final time. So it really becomes almost a situation where all the numbers you see on this horse, regardless of whether you're looking at Byers or Thoroughgraph or Ragazin or whatever, they're all educated guesses because the pace, you can't look at the final time. He is a big, good-looking horse. He worked very well against Sierra Leone. In fact, I thought he worked as good as Sierra Leone, if not better, working against him in company. Chad Brown's talking him up. For what that means. Trainers talk up their horses, so that probably doesn't mean anything. I can't bet him on paper, but I wouldn't necessarily, if he were to be part of the superfecta, I wouldn't be shocked, because he does look so good and he's training well and his past performances are murky enough that we really don't know how good he is.
Super, super live, in my opinion. His works have been absolutely terrific. He sat close to a slow, slow pace in his very last race and closed resolutely. That was just his second start without the blinkers. It's been a learning progress for him because he was very, very, very rank in his starts with the blinkers on. You can see in his works, he still wants to get it on. Partly the reason they had him on the outside of Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone needs to be pushed along. He's like, he'll only do as much as you ask. That's why he wears the blinkers with that big glop in stride. But domestic product has the ability to stop and start. If he gets into trouble, he's nimble. He's cat-like. I don't think it's going to be a problem for him. And he can be part of a little bit of jostle. I can see a little bit more seasoning each and every time I look at him. I really, really like him, and I am using him for sure.
All right. Good call for Zoe Cabman, putting a 30-1 shot in on her picks, and she makes some very good points about why. All right, 16 Grand Mo. The first is 50-1, rather than chewing up 2-3 minutes in this horse. Anybody have anything nice to say about him?
Got beat by Fierceness. I mean, he was third in the Florida Derby.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Fierceness won by 13, in fairness. So, I mean, anyone else that runs behind him is going to get beat at least 13 lengths.
I wish I owned him. He's going to make a nice little piece of money right in his career.
Yeah.
Is this the right spot to win the Kentucky Derby? No, not on paper. Can I play him? No. So there.
You know, it's funny you say that. Now I'm thinking, can't you see him being an Ohio Derby horse? Something like that, or a West Virginia Derby horse. That's where he would. And if he wins those, he'll make a ton of money for his connections.
Hey, listen, a full crop of what? 18,000, and he's one of 20 to get there. That's a pretty amazing accomplishment in itself.
And congratulations to them that they got him into the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, very good. All right, so let's go to the favorite now, Fierceness, the 17 post at 5-2 in the morning line. I'm not on him. His race in the Florida Derby was great, but he had everything his own way. John Velasquez rode a masterful race, getting him to the front right out of the gate, slowing the pace down. And against some really sort of second-rate competition, he just blew the doors off the horses in the stretch. We all know about this horse's tendency to pack it in if he gets in any trouble. I think he's going to get caught up in a fast pace. Maybe he won't try for the lead, but I think he's got to be at least second or third early. I think that with the way, especially with Dornock getting the one hole, and it's interesting you say, they say Track Phantom's not going to go for the lead. I'll believe that when I see it. But he's going to have a much tougher, extraordinarily more tough trip in the Kentucky Derby than he did in the Florida Derby. And he is so far has shown that he's a horse that can't handle adversity. If I thought he could get to the lead and get there by himself in a comfortable pace, I would think the horse would win for fun. But I just can't see him getting the kind of trip he needs to win this race.
You saw him in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Right? Yeah, it was fantastic.
He was sitting second outside of another horse. Mm-hmm. You were impressed, right?
You saw him in the Holy Bull where he stunk, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But here's the thing about Fearfulness. Okay. No, if he gets pinballed and if he gets sideswiped and if he gets bumped around at the start of the Kentucky Derby, he's probably not going to win. But you could have said that about Authentic, about California Chrome, about Big Brown, about Always Dreaming, about a lot of the horses in the Kentucky Derby this year. If they get pinballed at the start, if they get knocked around at the start, they're probably not going to win. It's not just Fearfulness, right? So in this look, the prototype for the kind of trip that they want would be John Velazquez on Authentic in the 2020 Kentucky Derby from an outside post. Let him break, hopefully cleanly. Don't send him, but let him use his natural speed. Let him get to the first turn. You're not sending him. You're conserving energy. You're not turning him around. And then look inside you and kind of survey what the situation is. I think the best case scenario, and this would be to me a great scenario for Fearfulness, would be Dornock on the lead, Track Phantom, three quarters of a length, one length just outside of him, a fairly swift pace, and Fearfulness sitting right outside of them, maybe about a length and a half behind them in third. I think he has shown in the Breeders' Cup that he can handle that kind of trip just fine. And if he gets that kind of trip, turning into the backstretch of the Kentucky Derby, in my opinion, he's a winner. And look, bottom line to me, I'm not going to overthink this. If all the horses in the race run to their maximum potential, Fearfulness wins. I really think he's solidly the best horse in the field. I think if he gets that kind of trip and he runs roughly the same kind of race he ran in the Florida Derby, maybe a few points slower because of the wide trip, then, okay, he beats Sierra Leone by four instead of, a huge margin in the Florida Derby. But, I'm not going to overthink it.
Bill, you got someone digging a grave in your, front room there?
It sounds like it, doesn't it? I don't know.
That's me here at Churchill Downs. We have the
Oh.
The NBC guys were setting up outside the trailer here. Sorry.
There you go.
What's going on?
All right.
Hold on, I haven't had my move.
He's digging Fearfulness's grave. Is what he's doing.
Zoe, we heard from you on Fearfulness yet, right?
Yes, Fearfulness is the best horse in the race on numbers, on everything. If he shows up now. If you go back to that Holy Bull, another tug for domestic product, who actually beat Fearfulness in there, just putting that one in right now. But at least he was third that day. And Fearfulness, I think, is growing up, which is what we want to see. If I'm Johnny V and I'm riding him, I'm absolutely freaking delighted that I'm in the 17 pole. Because he can break from the outside. He's got no pressure to his outside. He's not going to get smushed. If they come out, he can go out. It's an absolutely perfect scenario. He's got a quarter of a mile to go until that first turn. Johnny V's going to be in the 17 hole and drop over and just look down to the inside and see who's going 21 and change and be like, he probably won't care if he stays in the 17 hole around the first turn. He's just going to stay out there and let Fearfulness think he's in his own little world. He's all on his own out in the middle of the racetrack. Nobody can get to you, son. Give him a nice little pet. And it's just like a morning work. And that's it. And if he gets that kind of trip, he wins for sure.
Unless they keep him, unless they keep him in the 17 hole around the first turn. He's in big trouble.
He might just be that good, Randy. He might just be that good. If he gets that kind of trip, he absolutely wins. You know, my biggest concern is that Sierra Leone may just come lumbering down the lane and tag him right in the last jump. But he's going to be there till the end. It's not for me going to be a first or last scenario because everyone's like, oh, if he's not first, he's last. I'm not buying that this year, not with Fierceness. If he's not first, he can be second or third.
If he's 17 wide the whole way around, imagine the Ragazin and Thoroughgraph number. Be historic. All right. So a little bit of difference of opinions on Fierceness. Number 18 is Stronghold, the winner of the Santa Anita Derby. He's 20-1 in the morning line. I have a story in today's TDN about Antonio Frasu, the jockey riding this horse who has just been going great since he came over a little more than a year ago to ride in the U.S. and has pretty much established himself as the second top rider behind Juan Hernandez in the Santa Anita standings. And one of the reasons is, now what was that?
That's Fierceness dropping the mic when he crosses the wire.
Hang on, keep talking, I'm going to close this door.
Okay, but anyways, and we'll start with you, Zoe. I'm going to go back to the speed figures. 89, 89, 85. You got horses in here like Fierceness that run 100. The Santa Anita Derby this year was one of the weaker versions of it. I don't think he's good enough or fast enough.
On paper, no. He did work very, very well at Churchill Downs, and I've got no qualms about Frasu riding the Kentucky Derby for the first time. He is an excellent rider. It's again about the story for me with Stronghold. He's out of Spectator. She died foaling him. And the owners, Rick and Sharon Waller. Now, Randy, you're probably going to get a chance to speak to Rick and Sharon. She is the most wonderful woman you'd ever want to meet. And she's funny. They did an interview with her after the Santa Anita Derby win. And the only thing they told her was, you can't cuss. So she didn't really say anything. And she would be like me if you met her like on a Saturday evening. She will cuss like a sailor and you will have a fabulous conversation with her because she is a diehard horse racing fan. It's a homebred for them. It's just a really cool story. And I would love nothing than to see them win. It would be really, really cool. Is he good enough? I don't think so. But he'll be there for as long as he can.
Yeah, it's a cool story that goes back, I guess, three generations of the female pedigree with the Wallers. I read somewhere, I don't know where I read it, that Stronghold's slow speed figure in the Santa Anita Derby could be attributed to him waiting on horses. And I think that's exactly a 180 degrees the opposite. I think the reason, I don't think it was Stronghold that was waiting on horses. I think it was the Baffert horse that he beat in that race that was waiting on him. And that's why they went ahead and head all the way to the wire. Stronghold won. Look, I still think he's fast enough. I don't. I think the speed figures are an accurate representation of how good Stronghold is. Hey, he won the Santa Anita Derby. Awesome. Good for him. I'm not going to use it.
Number 19 is Resilience, the Wood Memorial winner, 20-1 in the morning line. Junior Alvarado takes over for John Velasquez for a trainer, Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott. Could say some of the same things we just said about Stronghold. Well, first of all, we know that the Wood Memorial has just had a terrible time since 2000, producing top quality horses in the Kentucky Derby. The funny side, ran in the wood, did not win it, but came back to win the Derby. There's this huge drought. And the reason why is that it's fallen behind the Bluegrass, the Florida Derby, and the Arkansas Derby and the Santa Anita Derby, especially with the Grade 2 ranking now. I mean, why would you go there when you could go to the other more prestigious races and try to win that? He's a nice enough horse, but, you know, look back at his Risen Star, where he was fourth behind Sierra Leone, Track Phantom, and Catching Freedom, four horses that will be in the Kentucky Derby. I think he was fourth best that day. So how could I think that he's going to be able to beat not only those three, but everybody else in the Derby? Bill Mott is as good a trainer as there is. He'll certainly have this horse ready for a big effort, but his very best, I don't think, will be good enough.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be embarrassed. I think he'll run a decent race. Bill Mott, as you said, is one of the very best in the business, and he'll have him clicking on all cylinders. He'll get the maximum out of the horse. But look, The Risen Star is the key prep race of any of the prep races so far this year. We've seen that. Fourth in there, I think, is a pretty accurate representation of how good he is. They picked the wood because it was going to be a softer spot, the softest spot of all the preps, and it was. And he won because of that. Blinkers were on for that race. I don't think they made that big of a difference. I think he'll run decent, but again, like I've said, with a lot of these other horses, I'm not going to use him.
Right. Yes, sir. I'm in agreement. And Bill Mott's going to be on a high anyway after winning the Oaks the day before with Just FYI.
Oh, Just FYI. How about that? All right. Now, last and kind of least is Society Man. It's 50-1 in the morning line for trainer Danny Gargan. He ran second in the wood at 106-1. So he earned his way into the Kentucky Derby, but got a lot of things going wrong from the 20 post, the fact that, you know, he's not very fast either. But the big story is Frankie Dettori. If Frankie Dettori can get this horse into the winner's circle, he's the greatest jockey in the history of mankind. I mean, he is really up against it, this horse. What is he? Is he a 50-1 shot? Yeah, he's a 50-1 shot. Again, you can't blame Reef Sorebreds. They're very good people. They run a lot of horses at the top level. They want to be in the Derby. They got the horse in. Good for them. But, you know, he should not only not win, he should finish near the rear.
We'll see what happens. I mean, Frankie's got a good opportunity to get a wide trip, but could avoid trouble. So is he good enough? No, probably not. But you're right. Frankie will be the greatest jockey of all time should he win on the Society Man.
Yeah, look, Society Man is Exhibit A for why I can't bet resilience, right? I mean, because if you like resilience at all in the Kentucky Derby, then you kind of like Society Man a little bit. It just shows how weak the Wood Memorial Field was overall. And I agree with you. I think Society Man would be a good bet to finish in the bottom quarter of the field.
All right, now I'm going to pin you guys down. I want your number one pick and your long shot pick.
Sierra Leone, I'm praying for a dead heat with him and Fierceness, to be quite honest, because they are my top two with no questions asked, and then domestic product. I do believe the Japanese horse is going to run very, very well for Ever Young.
Okay. Randy?
Fierceness, and you're talking about a long shot, Honor Marie for me.
Honor Nice. Marie. Okay. Very interesting. All right.
What about you?
Oh, yeah, duh. Sierra Leone and Just a Touch are my my two plays. So, Zoe, let's get Sierra Leone home, and then next week we can be heroes for giving out the Derby winner.
It's because it's going to be tough. Fierceness is going to be tough.
And while we're talking about the Kentucky Derby weekend, the undercard on Friday and Saturday is spectacular, and it also has a Pennsylvania angle, right? The TD and Riders are brought to you by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Associations, because Pennsylvania will be represented very admirably in the $1 million Old Forester Bourbon Turf Classic, the race before the Kentucky Derby, with the Chad Brown trained I'm Very Busy, who looks sensational winning the Mervyn Muniz in his last start at the fairgrounds. He'll be vying for favoritism with the Charlie Appleby trained Naval Power, Integration. But the Old Forester should be a fantastic race, and I'm Very Busy should be right in the middle of it. Meanwhile, this is 2024, so congratulations to Smarty Jones. It's the 20th anniversary this year of Smarty Jones's wins in the Kentucky Derby and Preakness and a near Triple Crown sweep. As smart as Smarty Jones is, I don't think he's really aware of this momentous anniversary, but I know everyone associated with him is. And his fans are, so congratulations to all of you. And he's still around if you want to breed to him. If you want to breed to Smarty or any other PA bred stallion, you can go to PABred.com. You can go to the 2024 Stallion Directory, and you can become part of the fun, and you can share in the Smarty Party 2024. For more information, again, www.PABred.com.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide the lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
I'm Very Busy raced away to win the Muniz Memorial Classic.
We paid incentives of over $30 million last year to 376 different breeders. For more, go to PABred.com.
Respect the law. He's earned it. a Grade 1 winning juvenile.
Tis the law, pops the cork in the champagne.
A classic winning three-year-old.
Tis the law, is gonna win the first leg of the Triple Crown.
Five triple-digit buyers.
Respect the law, tis the law.
The best son of red-hot sire Constitution.
He's left the others behind. He's gonna win the run, Happy Travers.
Tis the law.
The TDN Writers' Room is sponsored by The Stallions at Coolmore. And this week, that stallion is Tiz the Law. We've talked about him a lot lately on this podcast. His first two-year-olds will be racing this spring. A Tiz the Law filly set a record for a quarter mile at OBS, stopping the clock in 20-1. Now, this is her working solo for Tom McCrocklin. She went on to sell to Michael Lund-Peterson for $1.9 million. I was there. And my exact comments on this work were WTF, 20-1. Tiz the Law won the Grade 1 Champagne, Florida Derby, Belmont Stakes, and is a Travers winner by Constitution. He stands at Coolmore for a mere $20,000. And as we can see, Charlie O'Connor, as they like to say at Coolmore, call now or risk being arrested. I can't believe they put up that picture of Charlie. Charlie as a sheriff with a hat and a badge on is probably one of the funniest things I think I've ever seen on a Coolmore ad. So well done, Coolmore.
And we want to remind you that the TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by the Green Group, a tax accounting and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry and designed to save you taxes. Well, it's not just a big weekend in U.S. racing. It's a big weekend in Great Britain racing because they will run the 2000 Guineas on Saturday, the first leg of the English Triple Crown. And there's a huge story in there in City of Troy. He's a horse that people are just raving about. Huge potential. We bring in now Emma Berry, our European editor, to help us out with this. And Emma, the first thing I noticed was that this is a Triple Crown race, sort of the equivalent of the Kentucky Derby, as it's the first leg. City of Troy hasn't raced this year. Is that common that they'll bring horses into such a prestigious race without any sort of prep?
Yes, it has become more common, certainly over the last decade or more in Europe, and especially for Braden O'Brien and Bally Doyle. He's a past master at getting these horses absolutely on song for their big race targets without us actually seeing them race in the spring. We saw him three times last year. He's unbeaten. He's a proven Group One winner. We've started to see some of his opponents for the 2000 Guineas on Saturday, but certainly not all. Second favorite Rosalian hasn't raced since last October either. And you know, I think it's a lot more common now, especially with some of the bigger stables to, you know, have plenty of sort of testing gallops at home against horses of equal caliber, and you know, they can find out where they are with them pretty well at home. It just leaves us guessing as to, you know, what we're going to see on Saturday.
Being a son of Justify, what have you seen from the sons of Justify over in Europe? Because he's exploded over here and he certainly exploded over there.
Yeah, Justify was a real talking point here last season as well. He had the top-rated juvenile colt in Europe, that was obviously City of Troy. He had the top-rated juvenile filly, an opera singer, who's actually missing the 1,000 Guineas on Sunday. She's just had a small setback, but I think we'll see her in the Irish 1,000 Guineas all being well. And he also had the top-rated juvenile in France. That was another filly, Romatuel, and she runs on Sunday in the 1,000 Guineas. She's coming over from Chantilly, and yeah, looking forward to seeing what she can do. So he's, you know, as well as in America, I think he's got runners in four classics this weekend coming, which is quite a feat for a young stallion.
Well, City of Troy is obviously the horse to beat on paper, and anyone that's seen Bally Doyle can testify that Aidan O'Brien has every tool possible at his disposal to get horses ready after a layoff. Other than City of Troy, I mean, who are the horses that you think that you can pinpoint as the ones that are the biggest threats?
I mean, as I mentioned, Rosalian's already another Group One winner at two. He's the son of Blue Point, another really exciting young stallion coming through. His stablemate, Hartem, won the major sort of Guineas trial 2 weeks ago, the Craven. He won it really emphatically. And I guess that will give his trainer, Richard Hannon, a good measure on where Rosalian is as well. On everything we've seen so far, he's another really special horse. Ghostwriter's coming in without a trial as well. He won the Royal Lodge at Newmarket over course and distance last year. So, you know, he's perhaps a little under the radar coming into this race. But, he's one that I think should be given some serious consideration. Along with, there's a Al Yanabi who was second to City of Troy as well in the Dewhurst last year. We saw him in a racecourse gallop recently, looking pretty good. He's the Shadwell runner. They're probably kind of the leading contenders coming in for Saturday.
So would I be crazy in thinking if I put a trifecta together with City of Troy, is now, in your opinion, can anybody beat him, or is he just a sensation? Because I believe he's a sensation, but they're all beatable. So if I use City of Troy, Al Yanabi, Ghostwriter, and I like Knight Raider. Is that beyond the realms of possibility? I watch him have a gallop and he looked really, really good.
Yeah, I think that's a good call on Knight Raider. He's a really interesting horse. He hasn't got the same high profile as the others, but he had one run back end last year and won well. We saw him again recently and he did the same. He's only run on the all weather so far, but he's got a very progressive profile and it would be easy to see him running into a place. I'd like to think City of Troy is unbeatable. He's been, the real talking horse of the end of last season, all through the winter. He really does look special. I think, they've already been talking about him. His connections have been talking about him straight after a Dewhurst win and comparing him to, I think the words they use were, he's our Frankel. We all remember what Frankel did on the early mile this time 13 years ago. And God, it would be lovely to think we could see another horse coming through of a similar caliber. I mean, it's dangerous to use words like, Frankel in the same sentence as other horses, but we'll see what he can do. He's odds on favorite and he does look really special on everything we've seen so far.
Emma, I want to thank you for bringing us up to speed on the 2000 Guineas, which will be run this Saturday, the same day as the Kentucky Derby. And we'll take a look to see if City of Troy is indeed the superstar that many people think he is. Thanks so much for helping us out, and we'll enjoy reading your coverage in the TVN.
No problem. Pleasure.
As the Green Group Guest of the Week, Emma Berry will receive a free one-hour text consultation with the Green Group. So Mr. Green needs to get up to speed on his English tax laws. I'm sure he knows already because he knows everything. For more information on how the Green Group can save you taxes, visit www.greencove.com. We'll be right back after this message from the Green Group.
When it comes to the horse industry, tax laws are complicated and unique. That is why most people overpay on their taxes. Why not get a second opinion from the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred industry? With over 800 clients in the horse business alone, the Green Group has the expertise to save you taxes. There is a reason the most successful owners, breeders, trainers, vets, and horsemen use the Green Group as their tax advisors. We save you taxes. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with current-edge tax-saving strategies, produces positive tax-saving results for clients. Take advantage of this special offer. The Green Group will give you a complimentary and confidential review of your tax return. Contact us at 732-634-5100. Or visit our website at www.greenco.com.
Earlier, I talked about Verifying, the son of Justify, the only one standing in Florida at Pleasant Acres. Here we have a son of Tap It to talk about. His name is Magic on Tap. I've seen a lot of Magic on Tap as he was out here with Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. He was a $2.5 million in utero purchase by Jane Lyon when she bought Obie Kayin foal to Tap It. That result was the gray Magic on Tap. Obie Kay was the winner of the Grade 1 Humana Distaff at Churchill and also hails from a top female family. Magic on Tap won his first race for his owner breeder at Del Mar and went on to win the Grade 2 Triple Bend Stakes at Santa Anita for his trainer, Bob Baffert. Magic on Tap is one of only two sons of Tap It in Florida, and will see his first yearling sell this summer. He stands for a mere $5,000 at Pleasant Acres. Plenty of value there at Pleasant Acres with Sons of Tappet and Sons of Justify. This past weekend, I had the absolute pleasure of heading up to Golden Gate Fields for the last and final running of the San Francisco Mile at where the Bay comes to play. I caught up with the winning connections, and I could not be any happier for trainer Manny Badir and owner Ron Charles.
It's Lamas close to home, and Lamas takes the San Francisco Mile.
Here with the winning connections, Irving Orozco to my right and Manny Badir to my left. And Manny, you may be one of the most popular winners that I think we've ever seen here. When this horse crossed the wire, everybody just yelled, Manny! How are you feeling right now?
I'm telling you, I don't even know what the feeling is like right now. This is something else. This horse has been taking us for a ride, and this was the biggest ever race I've ever won right now, and it's this horse. And Irving, he's done a good job, and I congratulate the owners, Ron Charles and Sam Gordon, and my connections of the groom and exercise rider, just everybody all together. It's been a team effort.
What has led to him becoming so good under your tutelage?
Old age.
Oh, I'm all for that, like a fine wine.
It's working good for me. I like it, so.
All right, Manny. Well, you've got one to saddle here. Congratulations. Thank we are you. Absolutely
for
delighted.
NorCal.
For NorCal, keeping it here with the home team. Here with the winning jockey, Irving Orozco. He gave you quite good props there. How do you feel after winning your first San Francisco Mile?
Yeah, well, I'm sort of speechless right now. Like, same as for Manny, it's the biggest race of my career.
You're shaking.
Yeah, I just wanted to win it so bad. Growing up in California, this was a dream for me to win this race. And to have it, you know, win it for the last time that's going to be run, it just feels really good. I'm just so happy it worked out for us. We've been working with this horse for a few months now, and it paid off today.
And finally, how is it working for Manny? Because he may be one of the most likable guys up here at Golden Gate Fields.
It's amazing. We've won many races. We've won many races together. So hopefully it keeps it going. I love riding for him, and I'm sure we'll take some more pictures together.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Zoe.
Many thanks to those guys for a lovely interview there. And it's hard to just imagine that Irving Orozco this time last year was in hospital with broken ribs and a punctured lung. So a fantastic ride for him aboard Lamas, taking down the San Francisco Mile. Do want to remind you that not only do we have the Kentucky Derby coming up in Kentucky, but you can watch that live at Santa Anita as racing will resume on Friday with a 1 o'clock post time. Friday for the Oaks and Saturday for the Derby.
Well, of course, the Kentucky Derby is far from the only show at Churchill Downs. What a tremendous card they put together for Derby Week, including Friday, which, of course, is when they will run the Kentucky Oaks. And that's a race that has a lot of people interested. We have right here, Randy's the president of the Dermasota Gaki Fan Club. Zoe's the president of the Just FYI Fan Club. And she certainly looks like she's going to run a good race coming into it. But I like Torpedo Anna in here. This is a horse who showed a lot of promise last year when she won an allowance race at Churchill, ran okay in the Goldenrod, and then ran back to that big race when she got the 87 buyer back in November and just obliterated the field in the fantasy stakes. Ways and Means is also a horse that you got to take a strong look at. This is a horse that showed tremendous promise as a 2-year-old, came back in her first start in the Gulfstream Park Oaks in 2023, had a troubled trip, still ran second, beaten only a length. And being that was only her first start of the year, she should definitely improve. Zoe, I'm not a Just FYI fan, so you can, but I'm not making any bets with you because I know you'll beat me. So, but anyways, so Zoe, what do you think? Just FYI?
Yeah, absolutely. And she can win without you and Randy. In fact, that's probably better. She's certainly going to be fit enough. She's had three works in the last 10 days, her last work being just an easy half mile in 49.2. If you've not seen it, I implore you to go back and take a look at it. You want to talk about a filly in a hammerlock. Now, she really reminds me of Zenyatta. Initially, when I first started talking about her in what, March or February this year, I thought she'd filled out by some of the videos that I'd seen on XB TV. She hasn't. I ran into Bill Mott at the April sale and I pinned him down up against the rail of a barn. And I'm like, listen, Bill, I need to talk to you about Just FYI. I said, has she filled out? Does she eat a lot? Does she need more food? What's the deal? And he said, she eats as much as I can give her. He said, she hasn't really quite filled out into that giant frame of hers. She's out of a street cry mare. Since I'm thinking Zenyatta, she's just going to get better and better as she gets older. Her works have been great. She gets a good draw on the outside. She's my pick. In fact, I'm going to use the four horses on the outside. Just FYI, Ways and Means is excellent. Power Squeeze and Leslie's Rose. Christ, if I like Just FYI, why shouldn't I like Leslie's Rose? So those are my four with Just FYI on top.
So Zoe and I had a difference of opinion going into the Ashland Stakes at Keeneland because Just FYI had a series of good efforts, winning efforts, but slow speed figures. And Impel had fast speed figures, and I thought that Impel would be Just FYI. So we took exception to it. We had a horse-for-horse bet. Just FYI finished second, and Impel finished third, Zoe won. One thing I have learned, and I don't learn that many things in my life, but one thing that I have learned over the, you know, the course of 50 years as a handicapper or plus handicapper and horse player is that you have to be wrong. You have to know when you're wrong. You have to be able to go back in hindsight and keep a clear head. You have to be able to go where the evidence takes you and not be hard headed. And the evidence takes me to the opinion that Just FYI ran a huge race in the Ashland, that I was completely wrong about how good she was, and that she is the lead, one of, if not the leading contender in the Kentucky Oaks.
Yes, finally.
I think the Kentucky Oaks is going to be won by one of three horses. And this doesn't even include Tarifa, who is the program favorite, who I respect. I think the Kentucky Oaks is going to be won. I have trouble separating these three. Just FYI, Torpedo Anna, and Ways and Means. If you, the old saying in horse racing, if you put a gun to my head and say you have to pick one of those, I guess I would pick Ways and Means. But with Just FYI and Torpedo Anna right behind her. So Zoe, I've come around now to to Just FYI. You know, the way she ran in the Ashland, hey, it was a heck of a race. Now, one more thing quickly. You say that if you like Just FYI, you have to like Todd Pletcher's filly in there, right?
Leslie's Rose.
Leslie's Rose. If you go back and you look at the races run at Keeneland that day, every single winner on dirt was on the rail. And she had, Leslie's Rose had a beautiful rail trip in that race. So just because of that, just because I think that her win was aided by a track bias, I'm going to, you know, sort of downgrade Leslie's Rose in my handicapping and upgrade Just FYI, who was on the outside around both turns in the Ashland.
You're a man. You always come around. I knew it. I knew you'd come around, Randy. I've got one little thing to add about Tarifa. If you like her, she's a very good filly. I'm just a little bit concerned that she has the ability to boil over. With 150,000 people there, you're going to have to watch her extremely closely in the paddock and the post parade. She's a talent for sure.
And she certainly boiled over in her most recent breeze early in the race. She was early in the breeze. She was,
yeah,
as she tends to be, extremely anxious and very headstrong. So that's the primary concern I would agree about.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV, and this is for all of you watching. The work of the week this week is Fierceness. The Kentucky Derby favorite worked a half mile in company with fellow TDN rising star Agate Road Friday morning at Churchill Downs in 48.4. Johnny V was aboard for the work, and Todd Pletcher pronounced himself very, very happy, which is something you don't hear from Todd Pletcher very often. I can attest to the fact that that was an excellent work from Fierceness, who has been made the 5-2 morning line favorite in the Derby and will break from the no problem post position number 17. Many thanks to Churchill Downs for this footage. We'll be right back after this message from XBTV.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Meanwhile, the TD Drivers Room is also brought to you by our good friends at West Point Thoroughbreds, who had an excellent meet at the just-concluded Keeneland Racecourse brief season. They had four winners at the Keeneland meet, including a double last Friday. Cagliostro and also Northern Invader won on that card, both for trainer Cherie DeVoe. And then West Point came back again on Wednesday and made it to the winner's circle with the maiden by the name of Mo Rhodes, vaulting everyone concerned with those horses into the world of instant camaraderie. And look what West Point has coming up on Kentucky Derby weekend on the undercard. First of all, the American Turf Stakes for three-year-olds. What a race that is shaping up to be. And they have Cugino, who has done nothing but run well in his three lifetime starts, right there every time. And also Vava, who will resume her rivalry with Alva Star in the Derby City Distaff, the grade one race at seven furlongs, or is it a mile? I don't know. One turn. Vava, I think it's seven furlongs, against Alva Star in that one. Learn more, visit westpointtv.com.
All right, that's a wrap on this week's show. I want to thank my partners, Zoe Cadman and Randy Moss, our Green Group guests of the week, Emma Berry, and our editors, Katie Petruniak, Anthony LaRocca, and Aaliyah LaRocca. Everybody have a great Kentucky Derby. We'll be back next week to dissect what happened and find out who of us picked the winners or who of us have egg on our face. So we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.